He should have been out a long time ago. He is physically and psychologically in a very precarious state. And I think there's a lot of people who feel that they're going to just keep him locked up there because the U.S. will appeal for months and months until he disintegrates physically and emotionally.
We have 20 seconds, Chris Hedges, what you want to say right now?
What's that?
We have 10 seconds, what you want to see right now for Julian Assange.
Well, Julian Assange is probably the most important publisher, of the last few decades. He represents everything that I care about in terms of shining a lens into the inner workings of power and exposing the kinds of crimes of power and the fact that so many people have turned their back on him.
We're going to have to leave it there, Chris Hedges. We thank you so much for being with us, and Ramesh Srinivasan. I'm Amy Goodman.
Tune into KBOO for Bridge Over Troubled Water, a tribute to the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Monday, January the 18th from noon to 5:30 p.m. This retrospective program honors Dr. King's work through a combination of archives, audio, and contemporary interviews featuring artists, activists, public officials, and community members who have participated in this event over the years. Bridge Over Troubled Waters draws inspiration from Dr. King's mission to ensure peace, social justice, civil rights, and human dignity for all. Again, that's Bridge Over Troubled Water, a tribute to the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, on Monday, January the 18th from noon to 5:30 p.m. here on Community Radio, KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Monday. Time for more talk radio with your hosts, Cecil and Celeste. Stand by.
We all merge as one person.
Well, I imagine there could be some benefits to that, but that seems kind of dangerous to me at the same time. I'm just saying, you know. Well, good morning to you, though.
And good morning, Celeste, and good morning all of you who are listening, those of you who were listening to the program before us, Democracy Now!, and we heard the last segment was an interview with Chris Hedges, and I don't want to talk specifically about his comments, but it just reminds me whenever I hear certain individuals, I think of them way back when, and I remember Chris Hedges before he became a journalist when we were in high school together. But that's another story, which is amazing about.
You cannot bring that up and leave us hanging.
Well, I just remember we were in high school and prep school together, and you know, just, you know, when you're 14 or 15, who has any ideas of what people will become? So.
At this point, I mean, it, you know, depends on what you were voted. You know, if you were voted most likely to succeed or class clown or, you know, most enterprising, yeah, maybe. But even that's not necessarily an indicator who you're going to be, what you're going to be doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you. Okay.
The other thing I thought about is listening to Chris Hedges is the story of not about talking about free speech, about the right of the press and all. I was reminded of the story of Benjamin Franklin coming out of the Constitutional Convention. He came out, you know, where they were deciding about the government we are having, and he was approached by two individuals who asked him, well, Mr. Franklin, what type of government have you created for us, a monarchy or a republic? And Mr. Franklin said, a republic if you can keep it. And certainly,
hello,
things that we have experienced in recent years, culminating in the events of last week, and I won't even talk about, mention the attack on the state capitol in Oregon, in Salem, in December, and we've seen similar types of attacks throughout this country in recent weeks. Also, the people surrounding the governor's mansion in Washington State. The question is, what type of government do we have, and what type of country do we have?
Well, that okay, that's a good question. Oh, and maybe we should tune the listeners in, and pun intended, to kind of how we set it up today, because we've been looking at the news and following the news, and it's been a little difficult to get buy-in and bites from some of the folks that we've been trying to interview, either because with the remote working situation that their particular business or they have due to COVID, some of them have just not been able to accommodate our times or haven't responded, or, you know, there's also that occasion when we forget to call them back. But we picked topics and we didn't tell each other what we were going to pick, you know, because everything seems to be tainted by either Trump and his dealings or COVID or, well, there you have it. And, you know, I wanted something different. So you're looking at what kind of government are we going to have? Are we going to have, I'm tempted to say an oligarchy. You know,
yes,
but that's me. But so here's what I was looking at, and they work together hand in hand, believe it or not. I was looking at what kind of communication platforms we have, and how we use them, and how people have got certain ideas about them that maybe aren't true, and so you elaborate a little bit more on the government that, you know, that we were asked about, you know, in terms of what kind of government have you given us, and what, and, you know, the reply being what kind do you, can you keep, and then I'll elaborate a little bit more on my idea of what kind of communications platforms, I won't say media, but communications platforms do we have?
And you are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is More Talk Radio. And in a few minutes, we invite your calls at 503-231-8187. So, Celeste, you know, it's interesting that we remember times when we were in school and civic classes, and as whether or not we still have them in education, that's another topic. But the type of government we have, what we've seen in recent days, in recent weeks, allows us to try to examine not only the type of government, how we set it up, but who has access to the government and how we operate and form community and ways in which we decide on how we live together. One of the things that I thought of this week and looking at this strained civic lesson the last couple of months with the election and the critique of the election and the lies that were propagated by the president and his minions and the power they have over that. We okay. have to say, what does it mean to be in this country, and who is included in the we? And so I'm interested in whether or not people think that we are living in a society that has failed to live up to the calling that we try to uphold. Do we live in a democratic republic? And if we aspire it to be, what are things we can do to correct the obvious failures? And what do you see all the failures as have been broadcast in recent weeks and recent months? Those are just some of my thoughts, Celeste.
Okay.
What do you think about, and to relate it to that, as you mentioned, is in terms of one of the things that we uphold as one of the that lifts up our society is the type of communication and the guarantee in the First Amendment, free press. What are some of your thoughts about that as you deliberate and thought about some of the things that you wanted to highlight this morning?
Well, people have recognized, I'm sure by now, that our president has been suspended on social media platforms. And some of them have even mentioned the possibility or the reality of a permanent ban. And, of course, the howl of derision went up. You know, you can't do this. This is America. I have rights. I have freedom of speech. You can't censor me, yada, yada, yada. And I got to thinking about some things. Some years ago, quite a few years ago, actually, you and I did a show, and we talked about some crime or trespass or other that Howard Stern had committed, and that his cohort, Robin, I can't remember what her last name is, had supported him on, and it was something derisive, I'm sure, to black folks, because I think that's one reason why I was so surprised that Robin had, you know, backed him up. But we talked about how maybe Howard Stern was kind of a necessary evil, in that although he pushed the boundaries of good taste and common sense and respect, he, in some ways, was a trailblazer, if not a marker for us, in that he was doing it most of the time on the air, and he was exercising some measure of what people understand as his freedom of speech. Now, when the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and whatever gives us rights, We need to really understand the context. And you have the right to say anything deemed appropriate in whatever environment you're in. You have the right to say pretty much what you want as a rule, except, you know, fire in a theater, et cetera, you know. But you have to look at where you're saying it, because maybe what you're considering freedom of speech isn't necessarily what is actually happening here. So Trump is mad because he's been censored, he says, on Twitter and other platforms. That's not the case, because those are private platforms. So, you know, my question is, okay, so we got Howard Stern pushing the boundaries on one end of what can be said and challenging norms of good taste, et cetera, et cetera. Then we got Trump on another level pushing the boundaries of common sense and truth and decency by basically lying and smearing and more lies. And now he's paying the cost of it. You got people screaming and hollering that he's being censored, but it's like they're forgetting that Twitter and the like are first a private platform. Fox News, for all of it worth, it is worth, is a private platform. And then third, do we really want to celebrate the fact that he is being kicked off of these platforms? Because what does that mean for the rest of us? Because remember, again, it's a private platform. So if we're happy that he gets kicked off, how do we feel when we get kicked off? You know, and I'm looking at this as a slippery slope. I'm thinking, I don't know if this is a good idea. Yes, he's telling lots of lies and damned lies, to quote somebody. But again, is it a good idea that he's removed from these platforms? Because what does that say for the rest of us, you know? And I know people are really upset if they're conservative and they find that their analog to, I think it is Twitter, Parler, has been shut out, and they can't get anybody to let them play on their playground. And it's like, well, that's free market, y'all. That's the way it operates.
One of the things Chris Hedges noted in his interview with Amy Goodman in terms of these private enterprises, social media companies, was that earlier on there was a censorship of, not, I don't even, well, there was, okay, I'll use this word, censorship of the left, like WikiLeaks and stuff like that,
right,
that these private companies had. And as we know, the First Amendment is talking about the government. The U.S. government cannot censor you.
That's right.
Private companies is something else. I mean, people, we have to balance these rights, private versus public, and whether or not these things have an influence. Now, one thing, you know, 250 years ago when they were creating the Constitution, concepts such as the way we communicate these days were foreign to them. So one thing about the Constitution being a living document, or maybe or not, there should be a question about how we address some of the issues that arise in our time. So for those conservatives who are, quote, strict constructionists, unquote, that might work well for you if we were living in a time where we had papers, newspaper printed, and people had muskets to defend themselves. We're living in a different era.
Anyway,
go ahead.
I was going to ask people, you know, what are your thoughts on either one? You don't have to comment on both, just so that we have enough time. Hopefully we'll have a bunch of callers. But, you know, what are your thoughts on one or the other of this? Or maybe briefly how they tie together so that one guarantees the effectiveness and sanctity of the other. What's the phone number?
I believe the phone number is 503 231-8187.
And I know that you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, in the Willamette River Valley, 104.3, and on the web, it's kboo.fm, more talk radio here for you to join in over our electronic backdrop or electronic coffee table, if you will, and you know, share some thoughts.
I believe we have George's on the line.
Okay.
Hi, good morning, Celeste and Cecil.
Good
to hear your voices.
And good to hear your voice.
When I believe you asked, what is the context of your of today's discussion and the events? And I say, well, it's always a context in which racism, sexism, and capitalism play powerful roles. And probably someone would say, well, there's a few other isms. But I mention these because I do hear from time to time capitalism mentioned, but it seems that the economic factor, because of the pressure for social justice, sometimes gets left out a bit. And I just think capital is going to get what it wants, and it's and capital is an alienated dynamic, alienated from the well-being of Mother Earth and alienated from social justice, especially for people who are recipients of the worst forms of social injustice. So I just thought I would mention that, and I would be very interested if you have something to say to me about it, and then if otherwise, I would like to just listen to the show.
Well, thank you. I know last week when we were talking about some of the issues that the country faced, especially with the attack on the Capitol, people asked us, well, what if these folks take over the government? And I'm saying, you know, I have more pressing concerns. And I think given the isms that you mentioned, because we're in a really violent spasm of negativity coming out of capitalism and I'll go ahead and call it the death throes of white supremacy, that those isms are more of a concern to me, again, than the meta picture. It's like how capitalism has used racism to do this or sexism to do that or consumerism to do another. I'm dealing with kind of like the ground level effects, the ground zero effects. Like, how is my fellow human being going to treat me? I just noticed they cut me off in traffic, or they hopped in front of me in the grocery line, and not only did they hop in front of me, but they don't have on a mask. You know, things like that. So for me, it's kind of like the prize that I'm trying to keep my eyes on is civility and a good nature, the ability to rise above these mundane and daily irritants and be the person that I want to be, despite the fact that I'm not seeing that modeled by, well, for example, the president or by some of our federally installed electeds. You know, the fact that we have on a state level electeds opening up the door to folks who come in and threaten other people's lives when they're just trying to help us stay together. You know, that's what I'm focused on. What about you, Cecil?
Well, I think those are some interesting points, and just to the last point you mentioned in terms of the state government, specifically what happened in the state of Oregon last month while the legislature was in session, and they were a group of, for lack of a better word, protesters who were seeking to storm the Capitol, and one of the state legislators let them in. As a side note, I also read that some of the people who stormed into the state capitol in Salem, Oregon, three of them also participated in the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. last week. So it's interesting that these things aren't happening in isolations, that they are all connected. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're interested in hearing some of your thoughts and reflection about what's going on in our world, and your reflection about the Constitution, freedom of speech, and all of that. At this time, let's hear some wisdom from our friend Camilo, who's waiting on the line.
Good morning, Camilo.
Good morning, Celeste. Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for that very generous introduction. I hope I can live up to it, but I'm going to try. Let me begin with the fact that, and I think this is a bit of a response to Celeste's question about, you know, how do we compose ourselves in the face of so many different arrows and outrages that we're immersed in? And I think it's to determine your sense of who you are and what matters to you, and how you convey that, how you express that, how you live it. And as you know, I've been active most of my time since I've been here in Portland. But of course, because of a pandemic, that's really not possible. And a number of changes have happened. And I think that in a sense, the pandemic has really given us a gift of allowing us this opportunity to sort of re-examine what matters to us. And in the course of that, I decided to write. And I started writing a novel and a memoir. And one of the things that I discovered is how much I like it, how skilled I am at it, and how it really helped me to cope with the frustrations of the pandemic, of being isolated and not really being able to do the things that I believed in. So it's been an interesting series of accidents in this manner. And the novel that I started to write happened to begin about 15 years ago when I wrote a short story. And then I wanted to continue it, but I had some stories written that got lost when I changed computers. But then recently I was in this film, Silent Voices, about police brutality. And it was filmed at the Portland Playhouse, and they invited people to submit some things that we had to be in a program they were going to have. And so I decided I would start to work back on this story that I had written 15 years ago, and it turns out that it's become a novel. The novel happens to be set in 1955 in Memphis. And it's the story about two lovers who meet on the assembly line at the Ford plant. And in doing background research, I found I just went deeper and broader. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to write really not just a romance novel, but a novel about the city of Memphis in the period from the late 1930s to the late 1960s, when so much happened in that town. And in doing this research, you go back to look at the origins of the events that play out. And you really have to go all the way back to the Civil War and to Reconstruction. And when you do that, you look at how these historical events really impact the outcomes of what people engage in and what matters to them. And certainly the end of slavery and the Reconstruction and the Reconstruction Amendments 13, 14, and 15 were really profound events that had an impact on our experience and the way we're governed. And then again, there's the reaction to Reconstruction, and essentially the South managed to win the peace by overturning all of the efforts that were made to establish these three amendments and provide opportunities for the freedmen. And then World War One and World War Two, looking at what happened historically then, and looking at it very closely.
We're getting kind of far away from our topic point. Can you kind of tie this together for us quickly?
Okay, I'll sum it up. Right now, I'm looking at the history of Memphis just around World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really clear there is how the issue of white supremacy wasn't really sub rosa. It was right out front. And the authorities would say that the effort to overcome white supremacy was subversive and tried to preserve it through political means. And what happened in Memphis as a result of the yearnings of black people in order to have freedom of opportunity and to be able to work in defense plants and organize politically really continues to be played out this past week, where essentially the issues of Reconstruction are still extant and are still being fought over. So, I mean, I guess
true.
To sort of Tracy the point, it's really the historical lens and the information that offers us reveals the threads that are a part of the warp and the woof that have frayed, and people are trying now to put them back together again. And we see that we're really dealing with a torn, rendered garment that has never been put back together.
Yeah, Camilo, thank you so much. And I hope at some point in time we have an opportunity to you either have a reading or we have an opportunity to hear more about this novel that you are creating. I think it's insightful that you mentioned in terms of the amendment to the constitutions following the Civil War, the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments, and the reaction of white Southerners to it, resistance, and seeing that there is a seamless stream from that period to what we are experiencing now in terms of the reaction to racial and economic progress and the continued resistance to it, backlash that happens from it. So I hope that people are aware of that, that we can glean something from recognizing this pattern, so that we might be able to confront effectively, which I think is an inevitable backlash to any push for racial and economic justice. We are never there, and it's a constant struggle, I think.
Yes, and you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And you have the topics du jour. I'm talking about the challenges of expecting freedom of speech on private communications and private media platforms,
And maybe we shouldn't be so quick to applaud the fact that Trump has been censored, considering the fact that it could just as easily be flipped our way. Perhaps we shouldn't be so happy that no platform is willing to pick up Parler, because it could just as easily flip our way, because these are private economic ventures, part of that whole capitalistic expression. And Cecil, you're talking about?
In terms of the role of government and what type of government we have. Engineer wanted to pick up on something that I think you stated, and that Sonia mentioned, that, you know, Twitter and other private platforms can control who can get to use it. But she says, but whether they should control the venue for public discourse, that's certainly, again, making a distinction between censorship, government censorship, and these private platforms, which have taken an enormous role in how people are communicating, what type of control they should have in the venue of public discourse. But we have on the line, Pada is waiting to speak with us right now. So let's go to our caller at this time.
Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste. A few points here. You were mentioning Howard Stern earlier as a necessary evil, you know, in this freedom of speech thing. And mm-hmm. I've been thinking about what we've been experiencing with the president here, and just him as a person in general. And I was thinking, you know, he's an unnecessary evil. And he's a...
Well, when is evil necessary?
In the sake of satire, I suppose, you know.
Oh, okay.
Howard Stern could be considered a comedian in a way.
Yes, yes.
But he's also he runs his own show, but he's a private citizen. And
right.
His freedoms of speech, you know, to explore this Constitution. And now, our commander-in-chief, a president, I want someone that knows our Constitution. I want someone that knows the platform of president, doesn't need social media, you know, to express their thoughts and their beliefs. Like, they have the largest platform in the world. And when he stepped into office, you know, he refused to hand over his personal devices and accounts. I don't know if everybody remembers that. Like, he refused. He said, no, I'm going to continue to, you know, be online and stuff. He never stepped up, is pretty much what I'm saying. And that's just what we've seen. We've seen someone that just hasn't stepped up. And every young person knows there's been an adult in their life that, you know, is an adult, and you look up to them for respect, but they didn't step up to the occasion. You know, they were more absorbed in the power trip of it than the actual duty. And so that's where I see him being an unnecessary evil, and everything that's mm-hmm. happening to him, he has pretty much asked for that, because he's pretty much asked for it. So that's how
Well, you know, what I find interesting along the lines of what you're saying is, once again, we have to remember, this is not censorship, it is censorship, but it's not censorship that is prohibited by the Constitution. Let me be precise here for a moment, because mm-hmm. this is a private platform. But what I find interesting is that when he refused to give up his devices, that his devices were not rendered, you know, inoperable. Nobody turned off his account until the end of his 4 years of torment, you know. And I find it interesting that now all of a sudden, you know, it's too much. And why wasn't his accounts turned off at the beginning? Just because it was not only a breach of protocol, it was a breach of a trust. It was a breach of a sanctity of discourse and communication, because mm-hmm. all he did was lie to us. You know, mm-hmm. all he did was foment dissent and foment hard feelings and foment more separation and, mm-hmm. and lie to us. And so now mm-hmm. all of a sudden everybody's upset. But by the same token, even though he's been cut off and, you know, that's one less irritant in our lives, what about the fact that this could easily happen to us?
Well, that's, I mean, that's, that is true, but this man is a special individual that when in the power of the position of power that he was in, just blatantly abused it and disrespected it and almost lowered himself. I'm not going to say it's a lower format of communication, the internet, but it's very dicey on the internet, you know, because he essentially, he was just a troll. He was just trolling, you know. He's just reading stuff like any other citizen might read stuff. And, you know, we have to, it's on us to figure that out, you know, on our own. And a lot of people, we have this internal dialogue that, you know, every now and then it might go, you might see it on a message board, or some people are really into those message boards. But for the most part, if you want to make a change, you know, it's out in the world. And that's what his job was. And, you know, we all, we were all, I wasn't rooting for him, but I was rooting for the position of presidency in that it would bring out some sort of decency in a person. And maybe other people right. that feel that way, they might see mm-hmm. him change, because he's had so many chances to change, Celeste. And he's had so many chances. And if he could change, and we can see someone so stubborn or so,
so whatever he is,
any other term that's not right. foul language could change. Mm-hmm. And he just couldn't. He just couldn't. I don't know if it's not registering in him, but it seems that he's not on the same page as everybody else. Where yes, we have differences, but our internal dialogue, you know, we've tried to figure out how to come out of this, you know, a resolution that's peaceful, that's civil. You know, that his, my civil rights aren't stepping on your civil rights, or my pursuit of happiness isn't, you know, cutting down your pursuit of happiness, where none right. of those rules of engagement, just, you know, as far as, yeah, just none of those social rules of engagement seemed to apply to. He just took the position as in, you know, like a elementary school. If I was president, I would make it so I could drink milkshakes for dinner, you know? And that's mm-hmm. just a... It's a reality, yes, but we have evolved, and I think us as a country and citizens of the country, we know that it's evolved. We don't, you know, we're not out toting or talking about it because we're in the midst of changing still. But he's obviously shown his position, and it was, you know, we gave him a chance, and that's pretty much what I'm trying to say. But I think it's deserving of him to be back out on his own, because that's how he's been acting the whole time. So,
okay.
So those are my two cents, Celeste. Thanks for the time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call.
In listening to the conversation, it occurs to me that the president is behaving much like a child who had to be put in timeout. And you know how parents take away their favorite toys and you know, tell them to go in the corner. We took away his toy, his telephone, and it was interesting. You know, I appreciate the observation Potter made about the president refusing to hand over his personal devices when he entered into the office, and it became the means by which he communicated to the world. I wonder, just in terms of contrast, the person who preceded him in the office of the presidency just issued the first volume of his memoirs, which is in excess of 700 pages, which is just volume one. And I wonder if President Trump will write his memoirs, will it be by, if he's allowed to tweet again, will it be within 240 characters? But we'll see. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO, your community radio station, with Celeste, and I am Cecil. give us a call at 503-231-8187 as we enter into the last 9 days of the presidency of Donald J. Trump. Francis has some thoughts for us at this time. Francis, thank you for waiting, and you are on the air.
Good morning.
Hi. This whole conversation is very interesting because just yesterday I read an article by he's from the Ford Foundation, Darren Walker, about white supremacy. First of all, as I understand it, sedition is the are actions or words that incite people to act against the authority of the state. So these people that were at the Congress the other day were there to stop the validation or the certification of the election. So anybody yes. who said anything to them about stopping this was seditious.
Yes.
So to me, sedition is like crying fire in a theater. It's the same thing. It's not legal speech or free speech. It's sedition.
Mm-hmm.
But this article kind of, you know, we've all kind of, we know, everyone knows, that if this had been a group of people who were supporting Black Lives Matter, they wouldn't have made it to the steps, let alone into the building.
Oh yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, too many people have said that. And then, you know, on my Facebook feeds, I've seen all kinds of comments and comparisons. You know, yes. But you know, listening to your definition of sedition, I'm tickled because I'm wondering, well, if the reason that they're cutting Trump off from social media platforms is that they're tired of his lies, and damned lies, and that's the only reason, why wasn't that whole idea of sedition applied earlier? Because a lot
right.
of what he has said has gone directly against the Constitution and this country.
Exactly. I agree, and I believe that that's been his role since the beginning. But however, there's something that everyone agrees that white supremacy is a threat to justice and to equal protection under the law and so forth. But the way this article is written, it kind of presents it in a different way. He states that democracy is a threat to white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually true. So to me, these people that went, a lot of them, as anyone noticed, seemed like they were on a meth high, but they followed this man into sedition. However, the people who truly let us know who owns this democracy were the voters in Georgia the day before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's something that we need to hold on to. And
that's
even
true.
Even though these people delayed the certification, it happened at 4:00 in the morning.
Mm.
And I believe that our Congress should try to expel this man before he has to leave, simply because we need to affirm that this is a democracy and the people own this democracy, not the sedition, the seditious leader who actually, I feel that that man has been used by the covert white supremacists for the last 4 years. He's been playing He's been playing a role for them.
Yeah, and he no longer has any use, and they're kicking him to the curb. What are you going to say?
Exactly. Exactly.
I think the points that Francis made in terms of making it very clear on white supremacy that Camilo made earlier, that we have to be very much aware of this, of white supremacy, how it is the foundation of this sedition, insurrection that has taken place, its continued power throughout the history of the United States, and that we need to call it what it is and say it and claim it. And even, you know, one thing I hear now from some of the Republicans now are saying, oh, we need unity. We shouldn't press for the impeachment or the removal of the president because we need unity. Well, I think it's what we need is truth. Before we can get reconciliation, you know, in South Africa, it was truth and reconciliation. Until we are clear and able to say white supremacy, until there is acknowledgement of its power and how it is rooted in the very foundation of this nation, and the acknowledgement of those who are its participants, we cannot move forward until we acknowledge white supremacy, its power, and then perhaps it can lead towards reconciliation and transformation.
Right, and at the end of his article, he said we must renew our commitment to protect our democratic values and institutions from all enemies, foreign and domestic, especially those falsely disguised as patriots.
And who's the author, and where's this article, Francis?
It was written by Darren Walker of the Ford Foundation.
Okay, great.
And it's called "Is Democracy a Threat to White Supremacy?" And that is the cause of America's crisis. That's the title of it.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you.
All right, you guys take care.
You too. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, in the Willamette River Valley, 104.3, and on the web, kboo.fm. I want to send a hearty thanks to all of our supporters who have been sticking with us through the COVID closures, the uncertain economy, the political upheaval, and all that. And we ask you to not only keep supporting KBOO, but tell your friends and family about us. You know, you can always share the URL and bring somebody else into the fold so we have more people who are able to communicate, share their points of view, and build community. After all, that's what we're here for. And this is More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste. I'm here with Cecil, and we got a few more minutes for conversation, so hope you will avail yourself. The phone number is 503-231-8187.
And let me check to see who is waiting to speak to us at this time. James, I believe, is on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, so I just want to read something that I had posted on Facebook, basically concerning what happened on Wednesday. Basically, it says, basically what I said is that, you know, what we have to stop doing is we have to stop making comparisons to Black Lives Matter and the protests that happened at the Capitol on Wednesday. You know, the thing that most people really aren't looking at, you know, they look at the violence, you know, they look at what's happening, you know, what happens in the streets, you know, and it's like, while the protests might look similar, you know, we have to consider their political aim, You know, when the, you know, when they stormed the Capitol building, it wasn't about, you know, it was basically about reasserting settler hegemony. You know, they were upset because, you know, they feel that their power is being lost, you know, and they got a man-child in charge of them, so they acted like a bunch of children, you know, and it was unorganized. They had no demands. You know, they probably just thought it was going to be like a sword in the stone moment, like if they stormed the Capitol, something magical was going to happen. But they ended up just getting four of their people killed and then killing a police officer. I mean, there was no point to it other than just to, you know, flex. But, you know, when BLM, when we go out there and protest, we are there to create change. And the state knows that. You know, the state knew months ahead of time that Trump's people were going to be there, but it was like a wink and a nod. It's like, oh, our people are going to be here in a few months, whatever. They didn't prepare because Trump supporters are not interested in changing the system. They're interested in maintaining it and expanding it. You know, when you consider leftists, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, socialists, whatever, we're here to change the system. And they know that. That's why they can put together a whole, they can put together a whole division at a moment's notice, because they know they're corrupt and they know they're, and they know that we are there to change them, and they are not going to give up power without a fight. And then one more thing, I think people, you know, we need to stop using patriot language, you know, because ultimately we, you know, the as people who are here to change the system, we are treasonous to the system. You know, the system operates on being able to perpetuate harm to the most vulnerable in the interest of maximum profit. That's the system. You know, Black Lives Matter, you know, AIM, you know, El Movimiento, we're here to change that. You know, patriots defend that system. You know, it's, yeah, you know, like I said, history is going to judge us, is going to judge us kindly. But in the moment, right now, at present, we are still, we have to understand that what we're doing is treasonous. You know, as Martin Luther King would say, you know, we're disobeying the president to obey the king.
You know, that's that's
an
a good
earthly
point.
Power to identify with a higher power. You know, the arc of the universe bends towards justice, but, you know, it's a big arc, and we've got to, we've got to realize we can't use the language of the oppressor to tear down the oppressor.
That's true.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you for bringing that up and flipping the perspective, the angle of perspective. When you say King, I had a thought. A way to describe the syndrome that Trump manifests is a phrase called King Baby. And you may have heard of the King Baby Syndrome or King Baby in psychology. And in recovery circles, it has a slightly different meaning. But when you look at it in with regard to psychology, the King Baby Syndrome is a person who doesn't accept life's trials and tribulations with growth and introspection. You don't hold back your needs and your wants. You exploit people to make sure that your needs and wants are met. You focus on all of your in ego expressions. You don't take responsibility for your actions. You're always looking at how you can triumph over others. And when you look at the way that our president's been behaving, that seems to be a perfect example of the King Baby. And then with regard to what, you know, James was saying, yeah, you know, we got to remember that when we're seeking to get the rights that the Constitution says we're supposed to have, what we are in actuality is being seditious and traitorous
and insurrectionists ourselves, because that document and that system was not designed for us. So don't get it twisted, as the youngins used to say.
And as we come to the conclusion of our program today, we are reminded, thank you so much for your calls and your thoughts and your passion. I hope we continue on the path towards justice. Next week is meaningful. Martin Luther King Day, we celebrate next Monday. Remember, the last book he wrote in 1967 was Where Do We Go From Now? Chaos or Community? That's a challenge for all of us as we begin next week also the inauguration of a new president and vice president. Let's continue to build for democracy. I'm Cecil Prescott, and thank you, Celeste, for being here with me today.
Yes, thank you, Cecil. Thank you, listeners, and thank you, our engineer, Sonia. And thank you to everyone who continues to support the programs that you enjoy on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. We won't be here next week, but we hope you're still listening, because we are also going to host a modified version of the Martin Luther King Day celebration here on KBOO from 12 noon to 5 p.m. Hope you come, you listen, and you have your horizons expanded.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about